Cricket is a lot of things, but cricket isn't a perfectly timed cover drive for four on your first ball. It's spending your entire week figuring out how you're going to run out the batting partner that you secretly hate.
And cricket isn't breezy, sun-swept days in lush fields of green with your best friends. It's contemplating the loneliness of fielding at deep cover in the 43rd over of a one-dayer when it's blowing a gale and you can't hear a single thing other than the voice in your head that says, "Your dream is dead, Sam. Your dream is dead."
Cricket isn't a day out in the sun and a friendly beer with the opposition after the game. It's coming in two overs before stumps when your team is 3 for 15, chasing 2 for 412 declared. And it's suddenly a demon wicket and you're copping harsh personal sledges after every feeble play and miss, before eventually one keeps low and smashes you on the pad, triggering the throaty chorus of 11 men appealing in perfect unison to the umpire who has a 7 p.m. reservation at Aria and is desperate for an early exit.
The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the Great Cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl, I just feel a gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast on Fox Sports. My name is Ian Higgins. I'm joined by Sam Perry and David Edwards. Week two, we've made it. We made it to week two. Well done, boys. Welcome.
We're still here. Higgins, thanks for the welcome, as always. And kind of you to thank Fox as well. We're sounding more sold out every week. but this is, it's second show syndrome, isn't it, for us? We had a good start.
It was a terrific debut, wasn't it?
We debuted at one in the iTunes sports charts. Which
in Australia.
Lame of me. Yeah, you have to keep saying the category of every single thing. But now we're 115, so we're sliding at a ferocious pace. Thanks for joining us if you have, though, if you've remained
Someone rated
us
2 out of 5 on iTunes. I think it was Dad.
I got thinking about that, we were talking off air about whether we should sort of plug people reviewing us and ask them to review us, but it got me thinking that nobody in grade cricket is ever going to say anything good about another male doing something. Isn't that right?
I think the person who reviewed it 2 out of 5 was expecting something very different. But I like the bloke.
He's trying to listen to Serial.
So where's Adnan?
Guilty. First test. Tomorrow, it's a thing that's happening. Summer has started, right?
Yeah, I mean, isn't it that the first test is the sort of official kickoff of summer? I mean, club cricket's been going on for a little while.
That's true.
But Australia versus South Africa. Big talking points out of it really are that a bloke didn't get picked because he can't bat, even though he's a bowler, and we don't know what the whacker wicket's going to be like. And lots of talk about sledging and just general alphadom between Australia and South Africa. How are you seeing it, Dave?
Oh, mate, well, I'm really looking forward to it because South Africa-Australia is always just kind of a referendum on who can bench the most. It's just two of the most alpha teams in world cricket going head-to-head, you know, on bouncy wickets in the hot, harsh sun. Australia and South Africa are very similar nations, both colonial countries once under British rule. You know, both had a gold rush period. The climate is very similar.
I've always said that.
But it's just going to be chest and pipes at 10 paces, isn't it?
There has been an almost alarming amount of rig chat heading into this first test. I mean, first there was Faf du Plessis apparently riling the Australians because he liked to bare his chest a lot. And then this week we heard in the inevitable conversation about sledging that the Australians want to what was it? I've got the quote here, actually. It was Nathan Lyon. So it was from a source that I wouldn't have expected, but he said, ahead of this series against South Africa, we're going to play the Australian way. We're going to compete hard. We're not going to roll over. If one of our players is getting a hard time, we're going to stick up for him. We know where the line is. We headbutt it, but we don't go over it.
Firstly, I mean...
Where to start?
Look, I mean, online, we'll start there. I mean, you bowl off spin, mate. Like...
It was a strange choice of spokesperson.
Well, yeah, I mean, like,
it's the least alpha of the trades.
Yeah, like copping a sledge from an off spinner, it's like getting tasered by a parking inspector. Like, just put it away, mate. You're not, give it to the big boys. You're not meant to touch that.
But is this an issue for Australia? You said give it to the big boys. Who are Australia's big boys? I mean, you said it was a referendum on bench pressing.
Yeah, and always said that.
Who bench presses?
Look, from the South African...
This got to bench press pretty quick.
Why did that guy give us 2 stars?
Yeah, that's right.
Look, I'm really looking forward to I mean, he doesn't have the biggest chest on the field, but Dale Steyn is just a frightening presence in world cricket. And his piercing eyes, I think I would be so scared if I was an Australian batsman. I mean, they say he's a little bit older now, maybe a bit past his best, but, you know, I would just look straight into those eyes and just feel that he looks right deep into my core, and it would frighten me.
We should say at this point in the show, there is somebody that will join us on the show who can actually tell us about what it is like to look in or deep into Dale Steyn's eyes. And we're going to be... luckily joined by Ed Cowan, former Australian Test player, current first-class player of New South Wales.
It'd be really interesting to get his take on that. And you mentioned the alphadom of this series, Pezza, and I think it was actually Steyn who he said in an interview that his strategy and this South African strategy would be to target the captain, target Steve Smith. The quote, I believe, was, if you cut off the head, the body will die. Which is very aggressive.
That's so aggressive.
And it echoes of how America went after Bin Laden. But there are obviously some adverse effects over that. I mean, the rise of sectarianism, in the Middle East generally, and the rise of ISIS, of course.
Of course.
Could that happen if they focus on Smith only? You know, what could happen on the periphery there? I mean, there's Marsh, etc.
What does it mean for oil prices is the big question.
Well, that's... Yeah.
that's what you're trying to get to eventually. I don't understand how South Africa are fifth in the world, right? You look at their lineup, and 1 through 11, I mean, it's a generational... I mean, it's a wonderful lineup. I mean, the bowling attack is more cool. Steyn, Peterson, I think I'm right. Like, it's a world-class attack. The batsman, awesome, even without de Villiers. How are they fifth in the world? How's this happened?
Because we like to live in 2012, so we think that this South Africa side is good. I mean, fifth is fifth, as dumb as that sounds. I mean,
but in our minds, they're always going to be good, aren't they? Because we grew up in the era where they were dominant. The early and mid 2000s, of course. How do you see the series panning out? I mean, no, we're not here to talk about professional cricket too much.
Not here to talk about cricket.
Yeah, we'll brush past that as quick as we can. But thoughts?
Oh, well, quite obviously Australia will win 3-0 and it will be a procession of centuries to Australian players like every other Australian summer.
It is really hard to play here, isn't it? I mean, one thing that we've got on the agenda here is to speak about, how well Australia perform at home, and is it as scary a place as, say, the subcontinent is for Australia? But it is statistically extremely difficult to win here, statistically and a reality as well. It is a very hard place to win.
Another thing that might not be a reality anymore, I mean, you mentioned in the intro about Perth and the Wacker being this bouncy fortress. I mean, is it still that? I mean, I love stereotypes as much as the next guy.
I think all the pitches in Australia, like during that Ashes series, which is, again, just harping back to years gone by, but when Australia won 5-0 and, those wickets were lightning quick all around the country, and Australia's tactic was basically just, let's just bounce blokes out. That was the tactic. And so I think whilst the Wacker isn't perhaps as bouncy as what it was in sort of the 60s or whatever, I still think all the wickets are... they have a lot of pace in them.
If I could be earnest for a second, I think that's what makes this series intriguing. South Africa aren't England. I mean, we haven't beaten them at home in a series a couple of times in a row now.
Yeah.
And though we've beaten them there, so it's a bit of an anomaly in Test cricket where both sides have performed better away from home. It'll be interesting to see whether that means there'll be flatter decks or not. I want to pick up on... this headbutting thing, though. I haven't been able to get that off my mind. How do you actually visualise headbutting a line? Because I always imagined the line was conceptual. When we talk about crossing the line or overstepping the line, I always thought, or like a line at school.
On a concrete
white line. Yes. Are you over it or behind
it? So you think
it's
like a sensor, like kind of like in an action movie where in Die Hard, where there's like a red line that you can't hit or triggers like an alarm.
I guess that's my question. What is it? Clearly the Australians see it as a physical thing. I saw it as a social construct, as a social phenomenon, the line. It was like a metaphor.
And how hard do you headbutt a line anyway? Do you nudge it? Is he going to nudge it or is he headbutt it quite viciously?
Australians don't nudge. They don't like nudge. Well, no, they'll headbutt.
I mean, look at battering rams. I mean, they only headbutt things to do damage to it. So is Nathan Lyon actually saying, I want to do damage to the social constructs of morality in cricket?
Yeah.
Because that's what I read into it.
Yeah, I'd love to ask him.
Yeah. We can ask Ed, who's coming in later. I just love with Australian cricket, though, like even when they're trying to make a point about the importance of social and moral restraint, they're still having to be physically violent and attacking it. Like, oh, we know there's a line, but now I want to physically attack that line
it's
with my
alpha.
Head.
It's alpha. Yeah. I mean, this goes back to what Dave was saying. It is like this showdown is the ultimate alpha dog showdown. Australia v South Africa, barbecues versus Bright. I mean, it's all chest pipes and I mean Faf du Plessis, Ah, what a gorgeous rig. Stunning. It's in stunning condition. I don't care if he gets any runs. I just want to see topless Faf du Plessis.
Well, at least runs.
Well, you just saw topless Brendan Julian in the corridor. Of Fox
yeah,
Sports.
We did. I did.
Very strange.
And now it's my screensaver.
Yeah. Oh, that's very good. Look, the other thing happened. I mean, we are just operating in the social realm here, aren't we? Immediately, we're calling this Australian-South Africa series just a moratorium on cricket and just more about who's got a better rig and who can behave better socially. But we've heard all week about a second set of autobiographies that have come out. We've had Chris Rogers, Brad Hogg, Mark Nicholas, Darren Lehman. I mean, has there ever been such a glut of cricket books come out that are just simply sold on the basis that people are bad blokes?
So, there was one that came out last year and did quite well from memory. But why was our book the only cricket book last year? Thank God we didn't try to do it this year.
We
sold three books.
We'll be going up against Mark Nicholas, A Beautiful Game, My Love Affair with Cricket. That's the title of Mark Nicholas's book. I cannot wait to dive into that.
Yeah. I like that every person is kind of playing to the ultimate stereotype of their character. Yep. Like, you know, they say in theatre or whatever, you've got to kind of multiply your character by 100 to get the idea of it across. And Mark
sure,
Nicholas
I don't
is,
know about theatre.
Yeah. take it as granted, yeah. And Mark Nicholas is clearly embracing the idea of this kind of raconteur, debonair Englishman who has affairs.
Because Darren Lehman's book is called Coach. Whereas Mark Nicholas is about a feeling.
But still, some things kind of stay the same because Chris Rogers is bucking the trend. Brad Hogg is the wrong'un. We've said what Mark Nicholas is and Darren Lehman is. But, I mean, if you go through the main selling points of their books, Chris Rogers' main story was about a senior player in WA who said, "Don't you ever effing stand next to me."
In a pub.
Brad Hogg's was about the impact of the game on him. Mark Nicholas tells a story about Kerry Packer telling him to stop bagging the effing game. And Darren Lehman said that when he was offered the national job by Pat Howard via email, he told him to F off. It's really just it's more alpha than.
Sorry, more alpha than. It is. Yeah.
Not
There's nothing
it.
More alpha than having a go at a bloke in a book that you wrote.
Kerry Packer was alpha, wasn't he? He's the ultimate. He alphaed everyone in cricket.
And that's why we admire him, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We admire him. Yeah.
I mean, there's so many books out, as you say, guys, but look, is there anyone that hasn't released a book that you'd like to see?
I mean, I would love to read, you know, W.G. Grace's book, yeah. but more so just...
I think he wrote three. A trilogy.
So, but I'd like to more just to get a sense of what it was like at the time, and also, obviously, what it was like to... If there's not a chapter of him being bowled and then just putting the bails back on and keep batting, if there's not a chapter in that, I'm not buying it.
So can I ask, is this you saying that you would like to read the book that he has already written, or have you got a hypothetical book he's written in mind, and if so, what would the title of it be?
Second, definitely the second one. What's the title of his book?
I'm Not Out.
I'm Not Out.
It's got to be Amazing Grace, doesn't it? That's actually what it is.
Yeah, I was thinking something with a beard, yeah.
Rhyming slang.
You talk about period pieces. I'd love to see... I mean, I know Bradman has written a book, several books, and, you know, there have been several anthologies on Bradman, but Steve Waugh made the Tour Diary popular. I would have loved to have seen Bradman's Tour Diaries. Those long boat rides to England, you know, some of them took 6 months. You know, it was like a really long, glorified Kentucky tour, yet there's no information on what happened on that boat. I'd love to know.
And I'd like the counter diary to come out from Jack Fingleton, just saying, like, Jack Fingleton, my sectarian war with Von Bradman. I would read that.
There used to be so much religious sledging in cricket, didn't there?
So what was that sledge that Bradman said to Fingleton?
So I've read this recently, I think, and I'm sort of bastardising it, but right. Fingleton, as a Catholic, had a senior Catholic figure, I think, pour holy water on his bat. Fingleton got dismissed, walked back to the dressing room. Bradman passed him as the incoming batsman and said, "Let's see how I go with a dry one, mate."
Alphaing in the 1930s.
That's right.
Imagine if that happened today. Terrible.
It's terrible. You've spoken like someone just who's done it words. To you, actually. Yeah.
But it didn't affect me in any way. I've moved on for my entire life from it.
Can I just loop us back very unprofessionally to this idea of targeting players? You just mentioned it at the top of the show, Dave. I've never quite understood the notion of targeting a player. Is there something about the label of being targeted that compels a bowler to try harder to get them out? Like, does the property of the ball change to get that person out because they're being targeted?
I'm not sure, Pezza. I mean,
how does it
manifest? If you've announced that I'm targeting you through the media, then the batsman's aware of that and everyone's talking about it and whispering, oh, you know, he's got a target on you. I guess that it's just a psychological thing.
But aren't they all trying to get every batsman out?
Well, the purpose of cricket is to get wickets and score more runs than the opposition.
That's what they say in the huddle before the incoming batsman. Are we targeting this bloke? Nah, okay.
No, don't worry. Yeah.
Sweet, just bowl.
Six balls down the leg for this bloke.
Yeah, that's right. He's not being targeted.
Are you upset that no one comes to watch you play cricket? Are you tired of no one appreciating you for the talented third grader you are? The Cricket Family is the first program dedicated to helping people like you feel relevant again. We have a database of over 1,000 out-of-work actors who can come to your games and masquerade as your friend, girlfriend, wife, parents, or grandparents, helping you create the perception that the people close to you actually care about what you do.
Great shot, Jason.
No, I'm proud of you, son.
The Cricket Family, helping cricketers feel relevant once again.
It's a distinct pleasure to welcome into the studio a man that everyone in this room admires deeply, a man that has been good to the great cricketer for a couple of years and has now come into the studio to meet three blokes off the internet that you've seen once before. And you've seen us once before because you came in 2 weeks ago and then the whole thing completely stuffed up. And then I had to call you and say sorry for wasting your time. But it's a total pleasure to introduce Ed Cowan to the show. Ed, welcome.
Sam, what an absolute pleasure. You actually beat me to the punchline because I was going to say, I can't believe you're having me back twice in 2 weeks. No.
We're not even recording. We just wanted to chat.
Oh, exactly.
We were very nervous.
Have you heard of FaceTime?
Yeah.
We could just hang out.
We're really nervous about A, telling you that the show didn't make it to air, and then B, like having to actually call you and ask if you'd do it again. But I have to confess that I sent you an email just saying, look, Ed, would you consider coming back on the show despite, you know, complete unprofessionalism? And but at the same time, I was watching you on the internet play for New South Wales against Queensland. And then you guys won the match, and like literally I got an email back from you 5 minutes later. So my first question to you is, like, does New South Wales cricket not have a valuables bag?
You know, that's a very good question. Forget New South Wales cricket. I don't believe in the sanctity of valuables bags. I got burnt once out at Benson's Lane.
Oh, haven't we all?
Who hasn't, yeah.
Exactly. No, and I'm not talking about being sunburnt. Valuables bag, gone. And I was 15 at the time. I vowed, I think it might have even been Green Shield, like it was back in the day. I vowed never to use a valuables bag again. Since then, I've also been burnt having had my wallet stolen out of my pants at the Sydney University change rooms. But, so it's one all.
Yeah.
And I'm still running with valuables bag. It's so risky.
Why do,
like,
people still use the valuables bag? Collating all
that's
the
exactly
that's
right.
stuff in the it's, one. It's like it's a, more risky.
It's the cloud. It's the uploading to the cloud.
We've got to get some sort of international relations expert in here to articulate how how poor the risk management is of collating everybody's
people think it's a vault
into one bag.
Into an ASIC shoe bag that sits next to the scorer. Yeah. Like,
and the scorer is normally a 50-50 proposition as a person.
When I'm on my ass, absolutely, when I'm on my ass after cricket on a Saturday, I'm just going to go around and steal valuables bags.
Just do the whole
you could make
circuit,
an absolute fortune around the club cricket scene. You'd go from Camperdown down to Coogee, have a few
beers.
Or just
do ones, three, fives, all the away owns.
Yeah. Oh, exactly,
twos,
yeah.
Fours.
Or you could put your valuables in one of the sort of 750 pockets of kit that sit in the dressing room. You know, and if they
and
get it out of
you find chewing gum from 1996, you're like,
oh, yeah.
This will be good for the field this session. Multicoloured grips when they were cool. Where did that turn up from? Oh, it's been in the pocket where where we should put our valuables.
We're with Jerry Seinfeld here on the Great Cricketer.
We're completely off the agenda already. Ed, can you describe to... I mean, most people know you, and rightly so, and it's to your credit that you're a professional run scorer at the professional level, but like a lot of other people know you as like a passionate member of Sydney Uni Cricket Club. Can you tell us about your relationship to, you know, amateur club cricket?
Yeah, absolutely. I love Sydney University. I grew up there, basically. at the cricket club. So my first game was when I was 15, their first Green Shield team. I'm now 34, so you can do the maths, I can't. But that's how long my association with this club has been. You know, I played every grade. You know, lots of people, you know, fourth grade captains became mentors and still are.
Do you remember their names?
Yeah, I'm not going to give them away.
There was Jerry.
Jimmy knows who he is. He knows who he is. But so it's a club that's very close to my heart. As I said, played every grade. Even fielded a day in third grade last year when one of the blokes went down. Jeez, they were keen.
Media didn't get wind of that.
Well, funny, because the bloke I was replacing writes for the bloody Herald. I mean, that's why I did it, clearly. A little bit of social capital out there on the Twitterverse. Yeah. The fact that I'd nicked the first one and I was kicking bloody cats around cheered me up a bit. But God, they were keen. They were diving on the gravel, fielding them, for God's sake.
You've got to be really careful of Fox Sports clickbait, because tomorrow's article will be Cowan kicks cats.
Very good.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of good, you were always good. You mentioned grade there, but before grade came Green Shield, and before Green Shield came just being a good junior cricketer. Do you remember the first time that people took interest in you, and maybe the first time a local newspaper came to you, gave you a call and said, "We're thinking of doing a feature on you." Maybe
it was a local newspaper.
Because that's the dream of any young budding cricketer. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of 8 to 10 year olds out there listening to the Great Cricketer Podcast.
So back in the day, they used to print, I think they still do, like the Green Shield. So my goal, and I've still got my green scrapbook from every season where I'd write down how many runs I got, which bastard got me out, and my average, and, you know, all the shit that counted. Yeah. Who cares if you won or lost? But those little clippings back in the newspaper, like Sydney University 92, E. Cowan 27.
Also, like the small font at the back.
Not the big scorecard. Like, you had to really dig deep and find. I used to cut them out, and that was my dream.
Name in paper. Were you ever in, like, you know, like the Manly Daily or whatever your local equivalent was? Was there ever like a splash headline
courier
with a photo? Yeah.
The Wenty Courier, yeah.
No, they weren't interested in cricket.
They weren't interested in a feature. Because I remember when I did work.
Still that bad.
Okay. I'm just saying, you know, I did work experience when I was 15 at the North Shore Times, and I just thought the greatest thing in the world would have been being a sports reporter at a local newspaper and covering grade cricket. And then I met the bloke that was doing that, and he was the saddest guy I've ever seen, and he just looked miserable, you know. But I thought, what a life to interview grade cricketers and to cover the local rugby every day of your life. It was an eye-opener.
The thing, it actually doesn't move up in the world. I don't know if you've met the people that cover international cricket, but they could be used by the same description, actually, as to what you've just described.
I'm going to ask Ed about his 200 he scored in Green Shield, but you know, we've moved past that.
Can we just clarify for those who aren't from Sydney that Green Shield is
under 16 cricket? Right on, yeah.
Under 16.
It's the first time you really get to announce yourself, isn't it,
as a young cricketer. I say, Sydney club cricket is, you know, the premier amateur cricket league in the world.
You
know,
Sydney
Test cricket, we call it.
Sydney Test cricket. Did you play any great cricket down in Tassie?
Yeah, I played for the Glenorchy Magpies.
Okay.
Right. I've actually got a pretty funny story.
Please.
Well, you should never preface. That's pretty funny. But the great David Boone.
Never heard of him.
No, exactly. You get Alec. He was the, you know, running operations of cricket at the time before he's got this cushy bloody match referee's job cruising the world that he does now. But he was running Tassie Cricket. You get allocated to a club. And he put me into his office and said, "Son, got some bad news." So, "What's that, David?"
"We're out of beers."
And he said, "Bondi to the Bronx for you, son. Out to Glenorchy." And I was like, "Where the hell is Glenorchy?" But as it turned out, Glenorchy was a great club. I loved it. It was brilliant. We won a couple of premierships. The great Brett Jeeves, of Fox Sports fame. He was the captain coach. Luke Butterworth, Benny Dunk. We had an absolute treat. But
I love the idea of David Boone referencing the Bronx. I've just never made that kind of incongruous connection before.
What about Booney? How they always talk of him being the, you know, 52 Scoobies. He's the worst drinker I've ever seen.
Really?
I think it's like the greatest hoax of all time.
Well, we spoke to Merv last week. Merv Hughes, like Merv, just my mate Merv, last week. Yeah. And he said it was 53.
He might have had 50. Well, I've seen him after four, and it's like, can someone carry him out of the building?
That's not even an altitude.
If I can skip ahead in your career, and
jeez, that sounded like an expletive.
Like something else.
Yeah, sorry. Did it?
Yeah. Carry on.
If I could skip ahead in your career and move to your international playing days.
Brief.
And
disappointing. What other expletives?
That's my question. Yeah. No,
how would you sum up your test career?
I was going to ask you like what the actual process is of finding out that you're going to play for Australia. I mean, is it a phone call? Do you just watch the press conference? Like, what's the actual? Do you get a text? What's the actual process of you actually finding out that you're in the squad for a test match?
There's nothing different to getting the call from the chairman of selectors for club cricket. So Invers, at the time, he called me up and said, I was in Canberra for a chairman's 11 game, whatever. He said, you're on the plane to Melbourne for him, mate. You're going to make your test debut. That was it. Cheers. Thanks, pal.
Just a voicemail.
No, spoke to him. Gave a couple of little fist pumps.
Yeah. I mean, that was your test debut, but you actually were on the field before that. Mm. You kind of got you've probably been asked this 1 billion times, but...
1 billion and 1.
Yep, sorry. But, you know, in 2005, you were at a test match between Australia and the West Indies, and you were in the stands. Was it Pakistan?
Yeah.
Wikipedia, sorry.
I was on editing earlier. So.
But, you know, you got this call. You were a spectator there with your mates and you've been summoned essentially to the sheds. You know, put your kit on, you're going out there on the field in a test match. I don't know how old you were, probably about 20, 21. How did that unfold? I mean, while we're talking about phone calls, how did that phone call unfold? And when you went into the sheds and shared the experience with, you know, Ponting, Gilchrist, Hayden, etc., what was that like?
It was awesome, but to go back a step, you know, I was standing in the members' bar, and as you know, the SCG or any cricket ground around Australia for that matter, it takes ages to get a schooner. So standing there, having a chat with my mates, waiting for our second schooner, it was skooey of the day, and phone call came through that they needed a 13th man to run drinks. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I can do that. That's pretty easy. Score a pair of shorts out of it. And so all of a sudden, 13th man, I think Mardo might have been hungover or something, didn't feel like fielding. Hodgie was 12th man, didn't want to do a crossword. All of a sudden, little Ted out there at mid-off was previously in the MA Noble.
Yeah.
You know, waiting for a scooey. All of a sudden, he's got Iqbal Al-Haq smacking one at him. And,
did you get out that quickly? Like, were you in the change room? Someone was like taking your shirt off. Get this on.
It was like 7 minutes later. It was ridiculous.
That's funny.
Quite surreal.
But it's a fast forward to your actual test career. I mean, there's some significance to the test match starting tomorrow, as we record. The last time Australia played a first test against South Africa at home, you achieved the dream, mate. You hit 100.
Is this where you're queuing the highlights package?
Yeah, that's right. It's
Mark overlay.
Well produced.
He's
like
done
that.
It.
Yeah. So I was going to say, what commentary can you just do?
Who's commentating?
Oddly, Glenn McGrath. When the hell has he ever commentated?
I don't remember that. No.
Exactly. One test.
Ruined it.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Can you just run us through the moment of bringing up the 100 and your feelings? I'm an earnest man. And then also, did anything like... I mean, because it's every boy's dream to do it, did anything strange happen that you didn't expect throughout all of that? Because you actually pumped South Africa that day. Well, it was over 2 days, wasn't it? But yeah.
It's one of those things when you're batting well, you don't remember a hell of a lot. I remember being really nervous and then just thinking, you know what, you're having a day out, it's going to come, just hang in and they'll bowl some shit and you'll hit it for four and you'll get 100. Yeah. Sure enough, Vernon was a bit tired and slipped one half down the wicket.
Cricket's so easy, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it is. You've been batting for 5 hours. Yeah. But it was just that sense of relief, I think. Like, people probably think joy's the overarching kind of emotion, but it was just that relief of, fuck, finally. You know, I came into the test under massive pressure. I'd been batting like a busted ass in the weeks leading up. You know, it kind of got to the stage where I had to score 100 or I was gone. And then, you know, so that relief sort of played out. Life didn't really change much. It changed as much as you want it to, I reckon.
Mm. How does it feel for you thinking about the first test starting tomorrow as well, though? I mean, do you just sort of go,
Feels like a long time ago now. Yeah. But you know when you're growing up and you remember the series between South Africa and Australia, South Africa and Australia, and you think, it's not that long between series, but it just feels a long time between the last time South Africa were here. A lot's happened in my life and how it's changed from a cricket point of view. So it feels like a long time. It is a bit of an odd feeling that, you know, you don't get another chance to play the same team that you feel like you had one over. But that's the way it works. So you're looking forward to watching it.
You're completely resigned to that?
Yeah, I think so.
Because last season, I thought that you were a pretty good chance based on, you know.
Yeah, I feel like I'm playing as well as I ever have played. And I guess that's the only lingering
this
frustration.
This album's my best album.
No, guaranteed turd. But it actually feels as though if I was playing like this when I did have a crack at Test cricket, you know, I would have made a better fist of it. So it's one of those things that it's just all about timing, and you realise how hard the game is to learn the game at a test level. People say, oh, first class cricket, what a great breeding ground. Well, it is to play cricket in Australia, but unfortunately test cricket's played all around the world, and you've got a tour to West Indies where the wickets turn square, India turn square, seam elsewhere. So it's a great initiation to learn how to play cricket in Australia, but it's Test cricket is a lot harder than that.
Do you see like how Adam Voges has gotten to the team now and he's done really well, and he's sort of a guy who's on the sort of wrong side of 30, if I can use that phrase. Does that sort of give you any sort of hope maybe of getting back in there?
Yeah, it shows that if you have a massive season, not just a big season, then you know you might pop up. But again, it depends on timing. So at the moment, Sean Marsh is coming off Test 100. Dave Warner as the Australian vice-captain. So, you know, you can be playing well and nothing ever eventuates. I want to keep playing cricket while I'm still enjoying it and I'm loving the game. So I've got no intention of retiring anytime soon. And if I play well enough and an opportunity arises, I feel like I'd be in a good place. But I'm kind of resigned to the fact that, you know, hopefully I can score enough runs for New South Wales to win a Shield, and I take a lot of pleasure from that.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question on behalf of Dave? Because he mentioned this in the first segment. What's it like to have Dale Steyn's piercing eyes looking deep into your soul when he's bowling at you?
Did he mention that?
Yeah, no, I did explicitly.
I thought you were talking about our other faux interview that we did. Too.
Oh, right.
I don't remember that.
I mean, he's a very physical presence. He's not the largest man, but you know, he does have these piercing eyes that wouldn't look out
beautiful
of place
eyes,
in Hollywood.
Though. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, 007 style.
And that's a double-edged sword of it, right? I mean, he looks so beautiful, yet he's so ferocious.
It's one of those
that's what bothers me.
It's one of those things, though, that if you knew him, he's like the nicest, cruisiest dude you'll ever meet. So every time he looks at you, you can only smile. It's not like he's a prick, so you're like, oh, God. You know, like there were guys, I don't know if you remember Shane Harbour, I used to be so scared of him, and he used to threaten to, like, stab me with stumps and stuff. I thought he was genuine.
is that like a coping mechanism for you as a batsman? Like, do you get to know what people are like outside the sphere of cricket so you don't feel threatened by them?
Rule number one, if you ever go into the opposition change room, always go and have a beer with the other fast bowlers, because you actually learn that some of them are lunatics, but most of them are decent people, and the next time they have a go at you, you can have a laugh.
I feel like the rivalry between South Africa and Australia is very, like, in the media, it's a war of words. Cliche, klaxon just there. But do the teams actually get along quite well, Australia and South Africa typically?
Yeah, I'd say of all the international teams, well, they did win, you know, my brief appearances, but they're one of the few teams that you'd have a beer with after the series and socialise with. I don't think it happens that much, but certainly Australia and South Africa do.
Is that because we're quite similar? You know, we talked about the alphadom before and how this is essentially going to be a referendum on chest and buys, Australia versus South Africa.
Biceps.
Is it because, you know, we're quite similar inherently?
I think so, yeah, yep. In short.
Good. Alfred by Ed Town.
That's all I wanted.
Oh, look, I haven't changed my point of view on the matter. You know, I said what I said a few years ago, and I guess at the moment he's obviously trying to sell a book, so it's amazing how more and more of the story comes out.
So are you two mates?
I think that's a bit of a stretch to say that we're mates.
Well, that's certainly what he's been saying.
Yeah, look, I think, as I said before, it's a bit of a stretch of the imagination, given that we've hardly spoken about since it all happened, and obviously haven't played since, you know, he took over as captain. But anyway, that's all old news now. So, as I said, I think it's more about him trying to promote his book through the summer.
We'll move on to the next part of the interview, Ed, where we do what we call throwdowns. So it's
TDs, I like to call them.
Of course.
TDs.
A few gentle TDs just to warm up.
Yeah, that's right. 10 questions. Answer them as quickly as possible. He goes, what's the rule? You like rules on this. You want one word, two word answers.
Well, should we just say one sentence? Single sentence.
Yeah,
single
max.
Sentence. No comma.
And you can add grammar to it, Ed. I'll actually put that in there. If you want to add some grammar, some extended.
Whose rules are they?
Because it's Cowan. Because it's Cowan.
Exactly.
Yeah. A semicolon that can conjoin two separate sentences.
That's right. So we'll start off with a gentle one. Can I kick off?
Fill your boots, mate.
Okay, so Ed, when you were first picked to play state cricket, how good did it feel to wear your New South Wales lid in grade cricket?
Amazing. Just made me feel so much more powerful than the rest of the peasants that had to wear their club lid.
Good.
Ed, you're in the coffee business. Are you a piccolo man, latte, macchiato?
Long macchiato.
Long.
Long.
Sorry, I just fell in love. Ed, more sledging in grade, state or test cricket?
I would have traditionally said club cricket, but I think it's got to the point that probably everyone feels like they're 16, so more to the point, I'm getting old. That was the point I was trying to make, so mate. So the art of one word answers, but the art of sledging is dying, I reckon. It's going.
You say the art of it is dying. So
no, just the general, like, I reckon in club cricket, you're more likely to get, oh, your mum's a whore kind of stuff.
Yes.
And as you move up.
As a base, when you arrive at the ground.
That's exactly right. As you move up the high performance pyramid, as Cricket Australia likes to call it, it becomes a bit more, you know, sharp-witted.
Right.
Understand.
Your mum's a whore.
Ed, you've been described variously, and I'm using air quotes here, as a bon vivant, an appreciator of modern art, and you have a commerce degree.
I do.
None of those things help you score runs or win at cricket, so why do you bother with these strange pursuits?
There's no answer to that, is there?
No, that's a question that's about me.
Helps me with the crossword.
Yeah.
Look, Ed, some of your interests, and you just touched on them, include investing, funds management.
Where are you guys getting this
private
from?
Equity.
This is absolute dross. Are you on my LinkedIn page again?
Yeah.
Again, too.
I thought it was in private.
Dave Edwards has viewed it.
I'm just wondering, do you have any advice for someone looking to get into the market but not sure where to start?
Single sentence, please.
Diverse stock portfolio tips. So you've got
anything? Don't be scared of debt.
Good.
Particularly when interest rates are so low at the moment.
Mm. You heard it here.
This is one great stitch up. Next.
Ed, you're a professional athlete, as you know.
Yep.
You kind of a successful coffee company. You're studying a Masters of Applied Finance. You're also married.
What is this?
A beautiful daughter.
Romy. What a star.
What do you and Doug Bollinger talk about?
We're actually hot mates. Golf.
Golf?
Yeah.
What's he off?
Doug plays off 5.
Yeah, okay.
He hits a beautiful golf ball, but we talk golf.
Team Clark or Team Kadich?
No comment.
There's growing conversation here in Australia about the role of administrators in protecting long-term safety of players in its care when it comes to concussion. So it's a serious question. So what role should Cricket Australia play to protect Australian cricketers from the concussive effects of headbutting the line?
Very good. Just want them to headbutt the line and not overstep it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Do you headbutt the line often? What does it mean?
I think if I was to provide a translation, and you know, one could only translate that, it's just that he wants people to headbutt the line.
You have some tight key messages in Australian cricket, don't you? Everyone got their message that way.
We get managed.
Yeah.
The media manager would be all over that.
Yeah.
I told messaging. You to headbutt the line only.
Mm-hmm. Ed, when Joe Burns bumped David Warner last week in that Shield game, you were at the non-strikers end. So is that correct?
Yes.
Did you think about moving?
You were watching you closely, on the internet. Very closely.
Did you think about moving states again to get a game as an all-rounder for Queensland?
Yeah, that was dross, wasn't it? What dross was that? Did you see that action? It was like...
It's very round arm.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't it? Yeah. It was like Lasith Malinga.
just on that game, Eddie, in grade cricket, you obviously want to take home the 6 points, so the saying goes. So,
Well, the 10.
To that, of course.
For, you obviously were...
I didn't play at Sydney. It's been a while, apologies. Yeah. Yeah, to that end, scholarships for your kids if you play for us. So to that end, after your recent win in Brisbane against Queensland, how satisfying was it to take home the 7.9 points?
Thank you, Pat Howard. What a treat. Why don't we come up with a point system that no one can understand except the people playing the game? So when you open the paper to check the scores, and you're like, how did they get 7.9 points?
Just one last one. The previous series against South Africa was utterly memorable. We spoke about this before, for one of Australia's best innings in the modern era. What were you doing the day Rob Quiney scored 9?
I was at the other end. What are you talking about? What a legend. Hey, you know what? You should get him on the podcast because he is all time.
All right.
Put in a word for us, please. We'd love to.
He can talk you through his pair.
Just an episode on that 9.
Have you seen, actually, the Batuta advocate?
Yes, you know, yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Something probably close to your hearts. But that, after all the tell-all diaries, they were suggesting Rob Quiney's bringing one out for Christmas. It was brilliant.
Can't be any worse than Mark Nicholas' My Love Affair with Cricket. We'll cut that
it's
out.
Actually a good book.
How would you rate... Can we get back to some dross there? There's just been a bit too many serious cricket questions for my liking, so I just want to
Cut them out.
Okay.
talking about applied finance.
If you had to rank the books in order of how you're going to read them this summer, from Gideon Haig's Stroke of Genius, the iconography of Victor Trumper, 1, clearly, right through to Bucking the Trend.
Yeah.
Where were we? Come on.
Well,
there are 6 or 7 out. I want some more.
Well, also, Paul Kennedy's got a book out about 15 Lost Boys of Frankston or something like that, so I'll probably start there.
Fan of the show, Paul Kennedy.
Yeah, that's right.
I could probably list the ones that I won't be reading.
Go.
How long have we got?
Michael Clarke, My Story. Is it My Story?
It's his story, and it's not in my wish list this Christmas. Yeah.
How are you going to fill the stocking?
But what if your auntie buys it for you?
Yeah, I think that's the question. What book do you think you will receive, which is a comment from the females in your life at eye level?
The Great Cricketer. Yeah. It's $29.95.
Still there.
Yeah. Still selling copies.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable. Right. What print run are you up to,
boys?
We've
made $30.
Third print run.
Can we borrow some?
Let's just talk about print run.
Did you just ask Ed Count if we can borrow some money?
Yeah. Or just some kit.
Can you give us kit?
Absolutely. How much kit do you want?
Did you get any kit when you subfielded in 2005?
I gave it back though.
Gave it back.
Yeah.
That's very noble.
If you want kit, there's heaps of kit in my joint.
Cool.
I honestly, the Vinnies on Oxford Street, if you ever want New South Wales cricket kit, go up to the Vinnies
at Oxford Street. Great tip.
They get... Literally, and if you ever wanted to wheel a New South Wales cricket speed blitz blues or plan A, what's your plan B?
Yeah.
Whatever they're called.
Yeah.
Messaged it.
Get on the message.
Kit bag, if you want one of those, there's one up there. Go fill your boots, boys. Go fill your boots. There's one day shirts, there's test shirts, there's jumpers, there's helmets. Honestly.
Race out.
Really?
Yeah. Do all your Christmas shopping there.
It has been referred to as the best sports writing tribute to a particular sport since Fever Pitch.
Does it do anything to enhance literature? Would be another question.
I wouldn't even call it literature, really.
Should we...
Have you got any more dross for me?
Well, we do, actually. So
we got dross from the fans.
Would you mind staying with us, Ed, for the third segment?
Please.
So this is where we ask the followers of the Grade Cricketer, that's the official term, we're not sort of saying arrogantly that they're sort of disciples of us.
I'd say that.
You would say that, okay. Yeah. On Facebook and Twitter, whether they've got any questions about kind of Riggs, masculinity, life, etc. So we've got a couple in there that you might be able to help us with.
Yeah.
So I'll kick off the first one. So Hank Shaw wrote in and said, Dad filled in for our third grade team, his first game in 20 years. He took 3 wickets to my 1. How do I regain respect of fam? That's internet slang for family.
I'd suggest that your dad, he's got nothing to worry about. His dad's going up to 2s next week. And he'd probably never have to play cricket with him again.
See, it is a good thing.
Absolutely.
This happened to me when I was 12, actually. in a sons versus fathers game at my school, yeah. which I won't reveal for some reason. My dad bowled me first ball with an off cutter. It's still in my memory, like, triggering my memory. It's like Vietnam flashbacks.
Yeah. Is it?
But more yeah. PSD.
Yeah. You moved out 6 days later.
Respect to 12.
Yeah. He went to boarding school.
Dom Castle wrote in and said, I once declared on a teammate who was on 96, am I a shit bloke?
No, had his chance.
Bums has written in saying, is it normal to lose sleep thinking there's hidden meaning behind not getting the ball thrown to you between deliveries? Yes.
Is he a wicket?
It's always personal, isn't it? It depends where he's fielding. I guess if the wicketkeeper throws it straight to cover.
Oh, I see what he's getting.
And you're at gully or something like that, then it's definitely personal.
Particularly if he puts his hand, I want to give it a shot. It goes around the other way.
It goes around the other way,
Get your sweaty,
fine leg.
Get your sweaty mitts off at bumps.
There's a little bit of protocol to the way the ball returns back to the bowler, though, right? I mean, you can sort of tell the difference between first grade size, maybe third grade size. Like, if you see a wicketkeeper give the ball to first slip, that's extremely village. Mm. Or if gully receives the ball at any stage, maybe backward point.
It has to go somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I understand that, Ed.
If you've got two slips, doesn't the keeper take it and then, not looking at the second slip, just kind of throw it to him that?
It's got to be no eye contact.
Ian Healy style.
Yeah, a no-look soft underarm to second slip. And is that where you guys are at in 2016 in first-class cricket?
No, I think it depends. Just depends who's bowling, who's favourite for that session, who's showing the ball.
Do you have your best shiner at mid-off?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Best ball cheater, we call them.
Yeah. Who's that in the current setup?
Because
there's nothing more devastating than being at cover and seeing second slip hurl it towards mid-off. And
unfortunately, in first-class cricket, like, the ball is so sacred and so much work goes into it to get it to go reverse or swing conventionally that you don't stuff around with gully. Like, gully, he doesn't see it.
No.
Straight to mid-off.
It's just so good to hear what happens at first class level. I'm just vicariously through that. BH writes in and says, My girlfriend is developing tennis elbow from giving me throwdowns. Is it okay to end the relationship because of her elbow? It's getting silly. So, again, if you got distracted by the comments of someone in the room, it was she's...
Bowling machine for Christmas. One solution. Get yourself down to King's Road Sports, get a bowling machine in the backyard and... Thump. Thanks, darling.
I like BH's sort of specificity of why the relationship would end. Like, the conversation will be like, sorry, love, it's over because of your elbow. Like an actual...
Yeah, it sounds to me like this is a one-way relationship. I mean, has he thought about ever giving her throwdowns?
Exactly.
That's exactly right.
Relationship's not a one-way street, mate.
Nathan Keeley writes in and says, what's an appropriate rig to netting training ratio? Should I sacrifice one hit a week for an additional arms sesh? And that's S-E-S-H.
It's definitely a question for Ed, I think.
As opposed to the rest of them.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I would say he's pretty much on the money. One hit. It depends where your starting point is. I'd like to see, maybe Nathan can send in a photo of his rig.
It's dangerous.
Because if it's incredibly sloppy, we're probably going to tone down his batting training and we're probably going to up, and we'll probably come down to 3-1 in reverse. But at the moment, I'm thinking Nathan, probably 80 kilos, skin folds of maybe 85.
How are you determining that? Nathan.
So I'm thinking that, one hit... for one arm session, but I'm also going to suggest a little 15 minutes on the treadmill as well.
Yeah.
So that's the commerce degree, firstly. But also, I was about to ask, how pertinent are rigs at first class level today? And I think we just got our answer.
That is all we talk about.
Yeah.
Honestly, can I get my shirt off?
Put it back on, mate.
Everyone here's got it off. What's going on, Brendan Julian?
The more, there would be more rig talk than anything. And people really like admiration of the opposition rigs as well. It's become a big thing.
So what's the consensus with Faf du Plessis?
What a rig.
That's what I said.
Oh.
When did the word rig... What is this?
When it came back, Ed.
We had a guy at Sydney who called himself the rig.
Yes, I know this person. Yeah.
Loose unit.
The rig, yeah.
That's a big name to live up to.
Which he didn't for my standards.
Very good.
Right.
But as I said, admiration. If someone turns up, forget the big hairy fast bowlers, what about his rig? That is an absolute
sweet treat.
That is a sweet treat. He cannot bowl. But
So this whole character the great cricketer will survive for another 4 years. I mean, you basically just confirmed our whole kind of shtick for another little while.
Absolutely.
So. Okay. Mickey Belich, last question. Mickey Belich says, "We hate the captain. He's only he's only skipped because he goes to training. We're going to overthrow him. What's the best way to execute this?"
Well, leadership coup is really difficult to pull off. You've got to know. You've got the numbers. So he's going to have to, you know, shore up.
Do some polling the votes early. Mm. Do some polling amongst the team, and then just go straight for the kill, I reckon. Mm. Just go. Well, we don't know the cover, but Mickey's going to go straight to his face and say, "Listen, pal."
See, I'd be like, I'd be making some promises to guys. Like, if a guy bats eight and does a bowl, I'd be like, bump you up to six if you get behind me, and just shoring up those votes, because there's nothing worse than a failed spill.
You know what it is? High risk, though. You are risking fine leg to fine leg for the rest of the season.
You have to move club. A failed leadership coup, you have to leave state.
High risk. Yeah, stakes are high.
Now, which one of you three wrote those questions?
There are two more that I think are important to read out. I don't know
the
name. But
they're important.
So I'm sorry I don't have the name, but it was really more of a... Well, no. So, can you please show some love for scorers of grade cricket? I'm one and feel as if it carries no weight outside the cricket sphere. Ed, can you please show some
Shout out to John, Sydney University's cricket scorer. What a legend.
That's right. Narelle Johnson, too, at Balmain. Well, it's Sydney now.
She's been there for years. Yep.
Wonderful scorer. That's what we've got time for that segment.
That was lengthy.
It was lengthy. Did you enjoy it, though?
Yeah, I did. I'm going to write in next week.
I can imagine your question would be something like, "Did you watch me in the Matador Cups hit 350s in a row and
four?"
Stats.
That was a test. Oh, that's been the Great Cricketer episode 2. Bit looser. A little bit looser. But hopefully we head back and we beat Adnan Syed again in the charts.
Join us next week. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Ed, for your company.
Thanks, Ed.
Thanks, gents.